Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy, knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Welcome back to another edition of the Dado Download Podcast, a part of the Peristyle Podcast family of shows. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, alongside my co-host, Jack Smith, the baby face of the group. Jack, how are we doing today?
I'm doing well, and don't call yourself old, Shotgun. That's
whoa. Just because you don't know what facial hair is does not make me old, because I do have it. How are we doing, Jack? How are you? You got spring break, right?
I do. You must be jealous. It's nice. Get to enjoy. Only have a couple more years of having a spring break, or even a summer break for that matter. But it's good. It's Wednesday when we're recording this, so I've had a couple days off. Still, we'll get some USC baseball in over spring break, since I'm already in Northern California. I will be at the Friday game against Stanford, which I will talk about that series later. But can't get away from baseball over spring break.
Or decide not to, rather. You and me both. I did not have a spring break until I went to grad school. Outside of 2 days, we had our senior year. Our coach, we had a weekend series. We played on Sunday. And the night before on Saturday, he was like, all right, after we play tomorrow, you guys have two days off. I expect you back on Wednesday for practice in the afternoon. We were like, oh, my gosh, what? We get 2 days off? And so in the next 24 hours or next 12 hours, basically, we devised a plan, got some hotel rooms, went to Myrtle Beach, which was about a six-hour drive from my undergrad. And it was freezing cold still. There was barely anyone there, and we had an amazing time, because as baseball players, you don't get a spring break like everyone else. And Jack, being a baseball announcer, is deciding that he doesn't get a spring break either. He's back home. Jack, that's not how you're supposed to spend spring break in college, buddy. We got to work on this a little bit.
I spent last week in Texas the whole week, so I need a little bit of a break, and I used my trip a week early.
All right. As long as you had some fun in Texas, that's what's important.
Some fun. Enjoy. Went to the Stockyards in Fort Worth. Those were fun. Actually, where they're going to host the MLB draft this year. There's a big rodeo area, and that's where they're hosting the draft, since the All-Star game will be at Globe Life. So, little fun fact.
Interesting. Nice. Yeah. Well, we're going to jump into this. We're going to have our special guest on this week is going to be starting pitcher Eric Hammonds, coming off a really great start for the Trojans. He's been one of the bright spots in the last week, whereas there haven't been a bunch of them. And that's been a continuation of this season. But we're going to pick his brain and see what he thinks about what's been going on. First, I got to ask you, Jack, what did you think of the women of Troy? I know this is not the correct podcast, but I'm asking everybody, because that was such an incredible run, and we'll see if the men's team can do something similar. We're recording before they actually start playing. We'll see if we get it out before then as well. But I gotta get your thoughts. What did you think of the women of Troy and their run to a Pac-12 championship?
Oh, it was so impressive, and I had a chance to watch the game against UCLA on TV, so I watched that one. And then I really wasn't expecting to get to see much of the championship game, because I was at baseball on, I believe that was the Sunday game. And so I have to thank the baseball team for playing a 2-hour and 5-minute game on Sunday. Didn't get a chance to thank Eric Hammond about that, but that was impressive. It was one of the quickest games I've ever seen, probably the quickest I've ever called at the college level, which meant got to listen to the entire second half on the drive home. Whereas, you know, maybe I was expecting to hear the last couple minutes, but getting a 2-hour and 5-minute college baseball game is awesome, especially on a Sunday where everyone just wants to finish the series, get home after a day game, and listening to it. I mean, they handled Stanford, and after the UCLA game was super close, I was expecting a closer game against Stanford, but in fact, they were able to go out there, you know, after playing 2 overtimes, having Juju hurt, not scoring a ton of points, and control most of the way against Stanford was really, really impressive.
Yeah, definitely so. And, you know, this may be a baseball podcast, but we still appreciate the champions around USC. So we had to get
final
that in
Pac-12
there.
Champions.
That's right. We'll see if the men can do something similar. That'll be their only way to get into the NCAA tournament, because Selection Sunday, we will find out where the women are, you know, that they are hosting and who they are hosting. And then if the men were able to make some significant run here and surprise some people, then maybe we'll find out where they are heading as well. We now welcome in our guest this week, USC starting pitcher Eric Hammond, who's coming fresh off of probably his best outing of his college career, 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned run, and an opportunity to beat Arizona to salvage the weekend, try to get some momentum going forward. Eric, thanks for taking the time to join us on the Daily Download podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, let's start there. What went well for you? And you're coming off a rough outing, you know, going against TCU, going against a top 5 team, and then you come back next week, and you actually are, you know, we're looking at the schedule starters, and we see a TBA. And Jack and I are sitting there going, okay, is there an injury here? Are we trying to send a message? What exactly is going on? What went into you being able to turn things around from having your roughest start of the season to having your best one?
Yeah, I think just reflecting on what happened after our weekend in Dallas-Fort Worth, I think I was able to talk with Seth, and we were able to work on a lot of good things this past week, and just kind of taking it day by day. I think just putting in good days of work each day of the week, and then getting ready for whatever day I throw or when I throw. Obviously, this past Sunday, a lot of those things I worked on was able to, you know, produce a lot better results and help the team win, which obviously we needed after tough first couple games, but obviously we had a tough game last night against Cal Baptist also, but hopefully we can, on the pitching side, it looks like we're starting to build some momentum, and I know our hitters are going to come around, and I think we can, you know, once we start putting all three aspects of the game together, I think we can be a dangerous team going forward the rest of the year.
Felt like, especially after the first 2 games of the series, you guys really needed a starter to go deep into a game, and you obviously went deeper than you ever have before. I believe looking into it, you had never even gotten out in the 6th, so to be able to finish that inning and go out there for the 7th was really big. What was your mindset going in, knowing that the team maybe needed you to go deeper into a game than you had before?
Yeah, I think for me, it was just pound the zone. Obviously, you know, I think that's, as a pitcher, trying to throw strikes, hit your spots, and just compete. And I think from my mindset, it was just compete and attack the zone as hard, you know, as best as I could. And, you know, they were taking pretty big swings, and they were jumping out early. So just trying to produce weak contact, and obviously Seth calling a great game, keep him off balance, and the defense making great plays behind me as well definitely helped.
We talked a little, you mentioned that you pitched in Texas, obviously a Texas kid getting to go home. What was that experience like for you? Even, you know, the results did not play out very well for you, but, you know, what was the experience like to be able to pitch in front of, you know, 15, 20 family and friends, and, you know, get an opportunity to be back home, you know, when it's pretty rare that you get to Texas during the middle of a season?
Yeah, it was really cool. Obviously had friends and family there throughout all three of the games. Obviously seeing different guys from the other teams as well that I knew was cool. Obviously being out in California, I don't know a lot of the guys out here, so kind of going back home and seeing some guys that I played with kind of growing up was kind of cool. Also, yeah, just being at Texas Rangers Stadium was a really cool experience at Globe Life. Obviously growing up as a kid, I went to the other ballpark across the street. But I actually had my graduation on Globe Life's field, which is pretty cool for high school. So it's kind of a full circle experience. So yeah, that was pretty special experience to be there and have my mom, dad, grandparents there. So it was cool.
Did you grow up a Rangers fan over an Astros fan?
I was, yeah, Rangers over Astros. I know Josh Blum, big Astros fans. So, but yeah, we have a good time joking around about it. But yeah, Rangers over Astros.
He told me that Astros fans consider Globe Life to be Minute Maid North. Do you have a response?
I don't have a response to that. He can think whatever he wants.
Before the season, we talked to Andy Stankiewicz, and he told us that he thought you looked like a different guy, in the fall and just your work coming back. What extent do you feel the same way about yourself, and where do you see that you've progressed from your first couple of years? Obviously, you had Tommy John surgery, and that kind of set you back to try to, and last year you get back from the surgery, and it's everyone says, oh, you come back in 9 to 12 months, but really it's a 2 year injury nowadays, and especially for pitchers, is to come back and be able to, get back the regular feel. Where have you feel like you progressed from last season, and what were the strides that you really made during the fall this year?
Yeah, I think just being healthy was the number one thing. I know last year I felt like every time I went out there, I was just competing to the best of my ability, and obviously I was limited at the start of the year last year. And then once we kind of got things going, I was able to get that pitch count up a little bit. But yeah, I just feel like I'm healthy, and like during the week I can work on different things that I might not have been able to last year since I was, being a little more careful. Yeah, this fall, had a really good fall. Working with Seth, and just delivery wise and stuff wise, I think it just, being healthy, like I said, I was able to kind of enhance those things. And yeah, I still feel the same way. Obviously, rough start to the season, but I think kind of got away from a few things that I might have been doing in the fall. And I think this past weekend I got back to that more. And obviously, I want to continue to build on how this past weekend went.
To follow up real quick, you mentioned that you get to work on stuff more. That's something I don't think that many people realize, when you're coming back from a Tommy John injury. How different is the, you may be able to throw a certain amount of pitches on the weekend, but how different is the work week during the week as you're first coming back from the injury versus being fully healthy?
Yeah, I think obviously, I came back about 13 months, so it was just like finishing my throwing program. And as far as like the long tossing goes, the bullpen work, you're being more conservative with that as opposed to, maybe getting a few extra sessions in or getting off the mound more, maybe extending it a little more in long toss. So yeah, being able to do that just allows the body to get more into sync, better feel of everything. And just allows you to continue to build as a pitcher. And I feel like I'm able to do that a lot better this year than I was last year. Just from like obviously physically I was fine, but from a mental standpoint, you want to be more concerned. I felt like I was more conservative that first year, right coming back right away. So.
I've heard in the past that you said that your mental game is one of the biggest strengths that you have as a pitcher. I'm curious, how do you feel like that helped you during the more frustrating stretches to start the season, maybe across your first couple starts?
Yeah, I think it's just taking it day by day. I think that's the biggest thing for me, trying to be consistent with my work, attitude, energy, the way I treat my teammates, respect authority. I think it doesn't matter if you're having a good day or a bad day, that remains the same. And I think that's something that has helped me throughout pretty much my whole life. My parents instilled that in me from a young age. Both of them played D1 sports at Vermont and Arizona State. So they kind of experienced that and taught me the importance of not getting too high or too low, and how that kind of allows you to just continue to build on what your goals are.
Parents played in Vermont and Arizona State. You live in Texas. How do you end up at USC? How does that recruiting process go? And you mentioned, you didn't know any of the guys when you came out. So what's it been like, getting to know the guys throughout the last couple of years? And what's your relationship like with all those Cali guys now, as well as having a couple of Texas guys in the roster?
Yeah, so my dad, he was a tennis coach. He was actually the volunteer assistant for the men's team at USC in, I want to say, 2003, 2004. So kind of right when I a little after when I was right after I was born. And he loved his experience out here. They had a lot of success winning in football, obviously tennis. And so when I was in high school, he was like, why don't you go check out SC? And so I came out here with my mom. Threw well, just loved everything about, you know, obviously the academics, the winning tradition, just yeah, the culture, everything about it. Obviously the weather also, you can't go wrong there. But yeah, it was kind of everything I was looking for. And obviously, it was a different set of coaches then, but I've been really fortunate to have Coach Stankiewicz and Coach Jewett, Coach Seth. They've been awesome, coming in and getting us where we need to be and where we're going to go. So, and then yeah, as far as teammates go, I've loved every year. I've loved all my teammates. Honestly, it's, you know, it's baseball. Whether you're in Texas or California, you know, everyone's a baseball guy, and I've enjoyed, you know, hearing their experiences and listening to just kind of the way they go about their business and the different things they do. And but yeah, I've just enjoyed being and, you know, meeting a lot of different guys.
Off the diamond, what are some of the positives and negatives of living in LA after growing up in Texas?
Yeah, I think I don't know, I like all the, you know, the big city. I think it's kind of cool. I grew up in a suburb in Texas, so it wasn't like, you know, in the middle of the country. Like, you know, there was you know, obviously the Rangers, Mavericks, different sporting events going on. But yeah, it's kind of, there's a high level of energy around here, which is what I really like. You know, I like constantly, you know, working on stuff, you know, or doing different things, whether it's fishing or playing games or always that kind of competing aspect. And you're able to do that here, which is nice.
You talk about the energy level in Los Angeles. What's the energy level, the vibe like around the team right now as you guys have struggled to get out of the chutes this season? What's it like in the locker room right now for you guys?
Yeah, I think we all are remaining really positive. I feel like we have a really good team culture, and that's why I believe we can kind of get out of the little funk we're in. You know, we're continuing, you know, like I said on Sunday, if we keep believing and have you know, come out each day, work at, you know, ready to work and figure out what we need to fix, I believe we can, you know, get things swinging around. But yeah, from a locker room standpoint, everyone's remaining positive, having energy. I mean, our dugout's into every pitch. It's not like we, you know, have guys that are just out of it or, you know, not wanting to be there. So I think, you know, having 40 guys engaged and obviously all our coaches, you know, believing in us and, you know, that we can, you know, get this thing rolling, I think that's gonna allow us to do that.
To bring things back to your start, how do you feel like the game on Sunday, where you guys give up just the three hits and the one run after, I believe it was 25 runs in the first two games of the series? How big do you think that is to the pitching staff, and how do you use that as a turning point for this group as you guys try and right the ship?
Yeah, I think it's big. I think after that, you know, Friday and Saturday, it was kind of a little bit of, you know, a wake up call, if you want to say that. You know, we need to get things. Obviously, we're working hard, but we got to continue, you know, work harder, because right now, you know, the pitching staff, you know, our goal is to go out there and put up a zero every single time. So, I think, you know, obviously, me going out there Sunday and obviously having my defense, the double play by Dean, like I think I'd mentioned before. Wellesley in right field, just I think that was big for the team, to allow us to kind of, you know, especially the pitching staff, to get on a roll and just know that, you know, we can beat anyone when we're attacking and just executing to the best of our ability. It's not always going to be perfect, obviously it's baseball, but I think if we can hone in on the details from our, you know, conditioning, our catch play drill work, I think that translates into the game, and you've kind of seen that in the past two games. I think we'll carry that on into the weekend.
Yeah, it seems like with the weekend rotation with you, Cade, Naoki, and Tyler Strasburg, one of you guys has a great outing each weekend, and the other two, it's the results have been mixed so far. So, what does it take for you three guys to get locked in together to give you guys a chance every single weekend as you started Pac-12 play last week, but as you continue going through Pac-12 play?
Yeah, I think it's just continuing each day to figure out what we need to work on as individuals and how we can help the guys around us. I know, like last week when I was still in my bullpen, I had different guys, you know, watching and giving me little pointers, which helped. And I think if we can just, obviously, each, you know, relievers included, just figure out what each guy needs to continue to work on. And I think going into the weekend, we can bring it all, you know, bring it all together. And yeah, get things rolling here.
think one of my favorite things to see pregame is when whoever the starter is throwing their bullpen. You got every other pitcher lined up down the bullpen. How did that tradition start, and what's your opinion on it?
Yeah, so we started that last year. I think it just gets everyone engaged and locked in. I think it also allows the, you know, starter to have a little more focus as well. It's kind of cool, you know, having 20 of your guys lined up watching you, encouraging you, just from the get-go before the game even starts. So yeah, it started last year. We've carried it on to this year, and I enjoy it.
How much are you guys breaking down slash, you know, just picking apart each other as you're in your bullpens of different things to try to give pointers? I mean, when I pitched 20 years ago, it was much different. There was not the, you know, the advanced, you know, technology and stuff that you guys have now to where you're able to look at all the data and different things. How much are you guys, when you're pitching and throwing with each other, is it more than just, hey, this is the grip I use, this is, you know, different things, you know, which pitchers have done forever? How much are you guys trying to help each other with small things that you may notice in their deliveries or whatnot as your guys are throwing your bullpens and stuff like that?
Yeah, we're helping each other a lot. I mean, a lot of it, you know, we have like a key set of, you know, five or six things that we look at for each guy. And usually when something's off, it's usually one of those things. So I think, like, you know, each day, obviously different guys are throwing bullpens, getting mound work. So there's typically three or four guys just, you know, watching along with Seth. And obviously Seth is great. He's able to point things out, but it's also nice to get a different set of eyes from different teammates who see you every day and see your catch play, know you probably better than Seth does from a personal standpoint. So they might be able to figure out what, you know, maybe ticks for you better than, you know, one thing might be better than another. So I think that's huge. Just getting different eyes, different guys. Doesn't matter if you're starter, reliever, closer, you know, closer, whatnot. I think that's big for just development and continuing to build throughout the year.
Speaking of Seth, one of my favorite, I think, really small moments from last year, I believe you were pitching against San Diego State, and he comes out for a mound visit after a couple guys had reached, and he leaves, and you retire basically everyone else after that. And we had a chance to ask him on the show after that week what he said to you. He's like, I don't think I can repeat that on air. It's not super child friendly. So I'm curious, what's your relationship like with him, and what's the way that he tries to motivate you, whether you're pitching well or not?
Yeah, we have a very close relationship. I know each day he's, if I need anything, he's always there to help me. I think we're very open, honest, like, you know, communicate. I think communication's the biggest thing, like in any relationship. So, I love how he's, you know, not afraid. I like, you know, I like hard criticism, and I'm able to take it. So I love, how he does that to me, and kind of gets me fired up as well. So I think that was an example last year at San Diego State. So that was kind of a cool little thing.
We've asked the coaches about, you know, how they're dealing with and how the team is dealing with not having a stadium this year and the challenges that have come with that. How have you guys as players, how have you guys approached it? What was kind of when you found out the news, what was the reaction like in the locker room when that happened? And how have you guys kind of, you know, just gone with the flow since then?
Yeah, I don't think we've really looked at it as a challenge, more just like a different set of experiences. Obviously, at the end of the day, you're still going out on a baseball field, whether it's Great Park or Texas Rangers Stadium. It's still a baseball and nine guys on the field. So that's kind of the approach we took. It's like, here we go. Like, it doesn't matter where we're playing. It's just, you know, who we're bringing and how we're going to attack our work each day. And whether we're staying in a hotel at our place, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, we're going to be ready to go and, give it all we have. So I think that's, when we heard the news, obviously it was obviously a little shocking for everybody, but it wasn't like, oh, this sucks or anything. It was like, okay, sweet. Now we get to go be with each other on a bus more. I get to have, you know, more time together, which obviously we all get along really well. And I think it was kind of a cool, like, oh, sweet. Now we get a, you know, new set of opportunities and experience to be with each other.
Do you have a favorite family friendly bus or hotel story from this season?
Jack, don't ask for family friendly. We want the good stuff. Give us the good stuff, Ham.
Some people don't want to be exposed, I'm sure.
We had a good karaoke battle on the bus to Arizona. I think we're in round one of that right now. So round two is upcoming, but we have some pretty good singers on the bus. Wasn't aware of that, so we'll see a lot of country songs, few rap here and there, but yeah, it's going to be an interesting battle going into the finals here.
Did you make the finals or no?
Oh,
Yeah.
it was just the incoming guys. So yeah, it was all the freshmen and transfers. So it's a little tradition we do.
Are you upset that as you leave, as you're exiting the program, in the next year or two, that there will be a new stadium coming in? Because this is what you'll get used to this. Every time you leave somewhere, a year later, something new gets built. I feel like that has happened everywhere along my path. And now you get to experience it with the new Dado. Or you're excited to come back and see what it looks like, when you're in your pro career.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what it looks like. I've obviously have seen all the pictures of what it is going to look like. It looks really cool. I know the coaches are excited. The guys who who'll be here are going to be excited. But yeah, I think I want to say it's going to be 2025, so 2020, late 2024 when it'll be, or 25, 26 is when it'll be here. So yeah, I think it's going to be really cool. I can't wait to come see it. And yeah, I think the guys are really excited. And if I was a recruit, I'd be super excited about it. I mean, it I think I want to say there's a little weight room there, training room. That's pretty sweet. So I think yeah, if I was incoming to the program, I'd be really excited.
Well, one thing that we'll get to see over the next couple of weeks is you guys are going on the road to play some true road games. You've played a lot of neutral site stuff, far away from home, but now you're playing at someone else's place for the next couple of weeks. Something that you guys did struggle with last year, and I'm sure it's something you guys tried to address this offseason. As you guys go into the next couple of weeks, what are you guys looking to do going on the road, and what should fans expect?
Yeah, I think we're just gonna, obviously we have something to prove. Last year was not good. We were not good on the road. That was an obvious thing, but that's not in our heads or anything. Obviously, last year. This is a new year. We're just gonna go out and continue to do what we do each day, which is try to work and get better each day. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing love about this team is we come out each day, regardless of how we feel, how the day before went. It's a new day every day, and we just try to get better each day. And I think that's, in the long run, what's going to help us, achieve what we want to achieve.
Well, Eric, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us on the Dado Download podcast. We look forward to seeing if you guys can turn things around and get going in the right direction. And that starts this weekend with a big road trip, like Jack said. With that, we're going to take our break, and then Jack and I will return to further break down last week's action and then take a look forward at this week's road schedule.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back from the break. Make sure you're checking out our sponsors. Also, please like, subscribe, review the podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform. We love those 5 stars. We also love the reviews to see what you guys think. And if you have any questions, comments, requests, you can send them in at podcast@uscfootball.com. Just make sure you're putting in the Dado Download or Baseball Pod in the headline to make sure it gets directed to Jack and I. You can even request future guests in the show. You know, we had Eric Hammond on. We're going to try to get a couple more players this season. Though, if they keep playing the way they're playing, Jack, we might be cutting the show back to once every 2 weeks because I don't know how much we can keep repeating the same things. Another week where you feel like, all right, maybe they're building some momentum, and it just comes slamming down right on them. You know, they open the Pac-12 play against Arizona and just do not get good starting pitching the first 2 days and get blown out in the first game. I don't even remember what the score was to start that game. It was not good, but they end up losing 16-9 against Arizona on Friday, 9-6 on Saturday. And then they come back and get that great start from Eric Hammond, as we discussed with him on Sunday, to win 4-1. And maybe that's a little bit turning point. They play against Cal Baptist on Tuesday and they dropped that one 3-2. Multiple opportunities to get guys home with less than 2 outs, different things like that, and just strikeout after strikeout after strikeout. Give me your recap. What you think of the action this weekend and, you know, against Cal Baptist on Tuesday?
Yeah, I think it's kind of the same deal through the week. You know, we've talked all about it this season. This team just has not been able to generate much positive momentum. They come off of a really tough series in Texas, and we talked about that on the podcast. They've got an opportunity. They go play Fullerton. You get a win over a, not a blue blood program, but a perennially good program here in Southern California. 6-5 win. Maybe you think that will jumpstart the team. And then Caden Aoki has his worst start of his career, gives up, you know, 9 earned runs and 2 2/3. So you get a win, and then immediately it's a bad loss. And they get the win on Sunday against Arizona, and you think, as you mentioned, this could be a turning point. I think it was a turning point for the pitching, but then the offense slows down again and they lose 3-2 to Cal Baptist. Just for some reason, Chuck, and this team this season has not been able to stack wins. And the few positive moments they have had have been met immediately with another negative moment. And I think that is hard for a team to consistently overcome, especially mentally. And, you know, as we've talked about this season, I wonder how the effect of where they're playing and all of this stuff that's going on and the tough schedule to open the year, I just wonder how that's affecting the team as a whole, because one thing they were able to do last year was build so much momentum at home. They just haven't been able to do it even after the 2 wins against Portland. Then they've got to go play at LMU and they lose to Michigan. Then this weekend, they get the win against Arizona. Could be a turning point, playing another home game, but it's really not the same. It's a spring break Tuesday game in Irvine for a team that stayed there the entire weekend and then they can't win. And, you know, we'll never be able to fully dissect, I don't think, what the big problems are, but for some reason, this team is not playing the same as last year, where they were able to generate all this positive momentum. It's kind of foreign to this team this year.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot, actually, and from listening to Eric Hammond and from talking with, you know, some sources around the program, this reminds me a lot of the basketball team, where it's just not being able to, you know, build that momentum. Now, the basketball team was very much because of injuries. But not build momentum, not living up to expectations, but it seems like the team is staying together. So then it makes me wonder, is this going to have to be, you know, especially they are now 4-12 on the season. Is this going to have to be like the basketball team where they find a way to get into the Pac-12 tournament, which that's going to be the first thing they got to do. Then they've got to make a run in the Pac-12 tournament to do it, because at 4-12, you know, a quarter of the season has already passed. You're coming up on nearly a third of the season, and USC's record is awful right now. So, you know, you start looking at potential postseason, like it would have to be a major drastic turnaround. Not like, hey, you get above 500, you start playing, you know. No, you gotta win 90% of your games the rest of the way. And we've seen nothing that really leads us to believe that. Now, can this team get better as the season progresses? That is a possibility, and that's why maybe that is their only chance of making something happen. Now, the basketball team, you know, we were able to tell basically around the turn of the calendar, okay, this team is going to have to, it's going to be all about what they do in March in Vegas at the Pac-12 tournament. And now it's getting close to that. Do you feel like we're at that point yet for the team, or do you feel like there is still the chance that they can do something to turn things around?
I do think postseason hopes are dwindling and very close to, you know, being written off. I was kind of looking into it. This team's got 12 losses already this season, a month earlier than they got their 12th loss last year. And that team didn't even make the postseason. So they are really behind the eight ball. And each week we come on, it's like, you know, they're losing a little bit of the leeway. They've lost a lot of the leeway. They've lost most, if not all, of the leeway at this point. And they have not gotten at least to the really tough part of the conference schedule. You know, we mentioned they had a tough out-of-conference start, but now you go play Stanford, who's turning things around a little bit. You get a midweek against Long Beach State, who's always, you know, fought pretty hard. Then you go play UCLA. Bruins are the second worst team overall in the Pac-12 right now, but that's, you know, at Jackie Robinson Stadium on the road against a rival. That's a series USC could lose. And at this point, you've got to go on the road, which we talked about coming into the year was the biggest concern. And USC's 4-12 without actually playing a true road game yet, without playing a true road series yet. So I have written off at least a little bit right now, expecting this team to make the postseason at all. And I think you could have done that earlier in the year, but now you've got to be one of the best teams in the country to find a way to make at least a regional. They maybe can sneak their way in the Pac-12 tournament. We'll see what happens. And that Eric Hammond made a good point to us about how Arizona last year had not a great conference record, but made their way into the tournament and then went on a little bit of a run, which is, I think, what USC basketball, as you mentioned, is trying to do. But it's another one of these USC men's sports this year that's been disappointing. You saw it first with football, then with basketball, now with baseball. The difference between baseball and the other two is the other two started strong and didn't show the cracks until, you know, a little bit into the season. This time it was, you know, the first 0-5 start in program history. Now they're 4-12, which is the worst record in program history through 16 games. So it's a lot different than football, who started out the season and then after the Notre Dame, I think they finished losing 5 of the last 6. So it's different, but I think you kind of look at it the same way. I right now don't see how this team makes a regional after the performance over the weekend and over this past week, because there aren't any signs that show us they can rattle off wins, because in the few times they've gotten wins, it's been immediately met by a loss.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be much more difficult, much more realistic of can they make the Pac-12 tournament, much less the NCAA tournament, because in the Pac-12 baseball tournament, it's the top 9 teams. There's 11 teams. Colorado obviously does not have baseball. So who's going to be those bottom two teams? Right now, it's USC and UCLA. Those are the two worst teams in the league. You could throw Washington in there. They're only 4-7-1 so far this season. And those were three of the top teams last season. So, which is, you know, kind of crazy. You know, Oregon State's going to be at the top, but you look at the teams that are normally at the bottom, or, you know, pretty consistently in the bottom half of the schedule or of the rankings, the standings, Washington State, Utah, those are the two that did not make the tournament last year. Utah's off to a great start. They're 11-4. Washington State is 8-6. They went to Texas though, and had a great weekend down there, beating some big time teams. So they playing with a lot of confidence. So, you know, it's going to be hard. And losing to Arizona, Arizona's a team. Right now it feels like it's Oregon State, Cal, and Oregon are the top three teams. And then beyond that, there's just middle pack that could go anywhere from 4-9, 4-10. And they could flow in a different – and then it's USC and UCLA, because UCLA's lost, I think, 7 in a row right now. They are not playing well. They just lost last night to UConn, a team that had been struggling too. So, you know, both teams, USC and UCLA, they were picked to finish high in the standings, which tells you there's talent. UCLA's talent is super young. Now, we'll talk about them even more next week, you know, leading into that series, you know, the rivalry series. USC's talent, returning experience, veterans, that are not getting it done. So, you know, that's the difference in those two teams, but both of them are struggling right now. And it'd be really interesting if both the LA schools in the final year of the Pac-12 do not make the Pac-12 tournament. I don't think it's going to end up being that way. I think UCLA will turn things around, and I'm going to have a little bit of positivity here and think that USC can find a way. But I think the biggest thing is what you mentioned last week, is that they're not in sync as far as when the offense is going, the defense doesn't show up and the pitching, you know, walks guys. When the pitching gets going, you know, they won. Hammond was great on Sunday. They won 4-1 though. Like, why are you not being able to expand that to 6-1 on a Sunday or 7-1? Just give yourself a little bit of breathing room. And then Cal Baptist, that is a very winnable game yesterday. They should have won that game. They lose 3-2. They gave up two runs in the first inning. Austin O'Vern gets one of them back with a homer in the bottom half. And then the rest of the way, it's a 1-1 game. And USC had runners in scoring position over and over and over. They're allergic to hitting with runners in scoring position. It's been ridiculous so far this season. So we're going to do something a little bit different. Let's do three up, three down. Give me three positives from the last week of action so far this season, whatever you want to kind of do it. And then we'll do three negatives. And we'll try to do our recaps like this going forward. Just kind of mix it up. Give it a little bit different flair. Kind of like the stock up, stock down that we do on the Helium Boys podcast. And from the original roots from the Family Feud podcast for any of the OG listeners. What do you got for your three up? Who you got on there, or what do you got for the Trojans right now?
I'll start with Eric Hammond. And again, we were grateful to get him on the show, and it was great to talk with him. But we kind of mentioned shotgun going into the week that felt like USC really needed a good performance from a starting pitcher. And we thought maybe it could be a turning point when the staff and the whole team sees a starter go out there and put the team on his back and lead them to a win. And I think when we said that, you're expecting, okay, Caden Aoki or Tyler Stromsberg, they can go out and do that. But we had just seen Eric Hammond give up 7 earned and 1 2/3 in Texas. And after it was a terrible first two games for USC against Arizona. I think it was 25 runs on nearly 30 hits in the first two games of the series, bunch of home runs given up. Then you see Eric Hammond go out. He gives up a home run in the first inning to Mason White, who just killed the ball all weekend. Uh-oh. Here we go again, not only with Hammond struggling, but with the team just not getting outs and not throwing up zeros. And then he threw up a zero for every inning the rest of the way, worked his way through the sixth after previously never getting an out in the sixth inning in his career. They sent him out for the seventh. I think he gives up a ground ball through the hole, and Andy Stankiewicz decides to pull him, which I think was a good move. You needed to make sure that Hammond's outing ends on a positive note, especially with where his season had gone so far. But of all the, you know, starters that they had, Hammond had been the one that was struggling the most, but he was the one that was able to bounce back and give USC the deep start that it needed. So I have Eric Hammond as one of my three ups, and it was good to hear from him about, you know, how he was feeling and bouncing back from adversity in Texas, because he did it in a big way. And it's also, I believe it was the first and only win for a USC starting pitcher so far this season, which is a crazy stat through 16 games of the year, but he was able to pick it up. And I thought that was a big one. And obviously we thought it might lead to more positive momentum. That has not happened. My other two are Austin O'Vern at the plate. I think he has really turned things around after a slow start to the year. Had a 3 home run week when you think about the one that he hit against Fullerton, hit one in the weekend against Arizona, and then hit one in the first inning yesterday. And they were all semi-different swings, but I think he's locked in a little bit more with the kind of swing that USC needs him to have, which is his hitting line drives. And we saw at Irvine, and you saw that at Fullerton as well, when he hits line drives, sometimes they just climb out of the park. And that happened a couple times this week, as well as a big deep drive to center yesterday. Hits in 10 of his last 11 games, went 8-for-19 on the week. So I think you're seeing Austin O'Vern turn around at the plate. The defense has been a constant. He made one crazy play over the weekend where he slipped on the grass near the warning track, turned around, and then on his knees lunged forward to make the catch after falling down. You're going to get that. That'll be a constant. He'll cover a lot of ground in center, but it is big to see him hit the ball. And he did that this week enough for Andy Stankiewicz to move him back into the leadoff spot. And I think you're going to see him be the catalyst that USC needs, hopefully the rest of the way, because they need him to turn things around. The offense runs through him, and it did this week. And he was a big reason why USC was able to get the two wins that they did. And I think his second home run was one of the insurance runs, because at one point in that 4-1 game, it was 2-1, and he hit a home run, and then there was another run scored. So that was big, especially for Eric Hammond and some of the bullpen guys on the mound. My final three up would be USC's got options in the back end of the bullpen, which is something we couldn't say earlier in the year. The closer spot has been locked down by Josh Blum. He has struck out, I believe now it is 15 of the 20 batters he has faced this year, or 15 of the 20 outs that he has gotten have come from the strikeout. Just ridiculous stuff. He had another save in that 4-1 win over Arizona. Jared Fikas has stacked a couple of good outings after the blow up in Texas. Xavier Martinez has come on really strong and has given USC a couple of multi-inning, late-inning relief appearances this week. So those three have become good. You've got Michael Ebner, who has been used kind of in the middle. I thought he might get a start if Eric Hammond didn't go on Sunday, but he gave USC another couple quality innings out of the bullpen in the weekend against Arizona. So I think you're starting to see these guys line up in the back end of the bullpen, and you've got at least three that you're really confident in right now, and Blum and Martinez and Fikas.
Okay, you could let me get in there at some point, Jack. But yes,
you asked me for three.
I also had Eric Hammond and Austin O'Vern on mine, and my third one was Josh Blum, and you mentioned all of them. Blum actually has 16 strikeouts and 22 outs now. So, but guess how many hits he's given up? You know, it's a little rough. He's given up one hit so far. One hit. One hit so far.
Which was a home run, I believe, too.
He has given up two runs, and one of them being earned. So I guess it was a home run there. So opponents are hitting 0-45 against him. He has been outstanding, fantastic. The question is, can you get the ball to him with a lead? Because he's only got two saves, because USC's only got four wins. As you mentioned, the starting pitching has not been able to get any wins. Him and getting the first one, starting pitchers are now 1-8 combined. So, you know, the starting pitching, I think, is where it starts. We'll talk about that in my three down. But I think you're exactly right. Eric Hammond, I think it's big for him to get going, especially with what we heard from Andy Stankiewicz, Seth Etherton before the season. They got to get him going. And you expect Kaden Aoki to kind of turn things around. You know, just he's getting hit hard at times. But also you feel like he's had some bad luck at times too, watching the games. Like, his stat lines don't feel like they should be as bad as they have been. So, you know, we'll see if he can turn things around, make some adjustments there. But the starting pitching has to be better. And Hammond's start on Sunday was a positive. And then they got a positive start from, you know, from the freshman Garen Rizzo on against Cal Baptist. It wasn't super long or anything. Gave up two runs in the first inning, but he settled down after that. So I thought that was really big for him. You know, gave up two runs in that first inning, goes 4 2/3, gives up three total runs, but pitched pretty well after that first inning. So I think it's a positive sign going forward. Can they keep that up? And Mason Edwards came in after, who had been the midweek starter and struggled during the midweek, came in after and threw an inning in 2/3 with no runs, no hits, no anything, no walks, two strikeouts. He pitched really well. So I think that's a big positive for USC, is to get him going, because, you know, when we talked to Seth Etherton before the season, he was super high on what Mason Edwards can become for USC. And I thought it was really important. You mentioned how Andy Stankiewicz got Eric Hammond out after the one hit in the sixth or the seventh, to let him get that confidence to say, you know, not let it build up and, you know, have a negative come out of a really good start. Same thing with Mason Edwards. I noted yesterday, is they took him out earlier than maybe they could have kept him in. They could have kept rolling with him. And instead they said, let's get him out. Let's keep that confidence up. Hey, great outing. Let's build on this next time. Let's build on it this weekend against Stanford. If we can, we use you in relief, that type of thing. And then Overearn has been, that's the difference. He's a difference maker for USC. If they can get some guys going with him, then this offense has a chance to come alive. He is now batting .237. That doesn't sound great, right? Well, he was batting, what was he batting at the beginning of the season? Much worse.
90 something.
Yeah. So, you know, and the on-base percentage is around .350. So he's doing that. He stole some bases. You know, he had a couple more against Cal Baptist. You mentioned that he's got a hit in 10 of the last 11 games. Last week, he had multiple hits in 3 of the 4 games. He also, in the one game he didn't, and yesterday against Cal Baptist, he only had one hit in those games, but he reached base multiple times. He's been on base multiple times each of the last 5 games, actually the last 6 games at least. And when he gets on base, he can become a troublemaker. He can become a guy that, you know, that disrupts the pitching, can create some chaos, that type of thing. And you know, he got gifted a triple, but now he's got two triples on the season. That, you know, that, so that always helps the stat line. But I thought it was interesting. You mentioned that he's hit line drives and they're just going out of the park. What did Travis Jewett tell us last year? He's like, you're going to see some of these triples are not going to be triples anymore in the future, because once he taps into his power, and I think he's doing that a little bit more, you know, four homers already this season, to go with only two triples, which is kind of the exact opposite of what it was last year. So I think you're seeing that a little bit, where it's not that he's trying to jack homers out, but he's gotten a little bit stronger and suddenly the ball is carrying a little bit more. So to see him get going is a huge positive for USC. Now they just got to get some other guys to come along with him.
Yeah, and you never can see into a guy's head, but you could maybe look at what he did earlier in the season and think he was trying to hit for the power himself. When he is off, he is hitting pop-ups, and he was hitting a lot of pop-ups earlier in the year. He was kind of uppercutting balls. That's when he's, you know, swing and miss at a high fastball, or he'll pop it up in foul territory or in fair territory. That's when he's going wrong. But when he's going right, it is line drives and chuck, and sometimes they climb, but sometimes they're just hits the opposite way. Sometimes they're strong singles, but he's fast enough to turn it into a double, or it should be a double and then turns into a triple. But I think outside of his swing too, the most important thing is just getting on base, because there was actually a really interesting quote by Andy Stankiewicz in the Daily Trojan. I believe it was right ahead of the game against Michigan, where I thought it was pretty telling. Andy Stankiewicz straight up said, we've got to teach him and get him to realize that ball four is a good thing. And that's not something you want to say all the time about your leadoff hitter. And that could be one of the reasons that he was moved down into the lineup. But the fact that you mentioned he's been able to be hit by pitch, which is you get on base, but it's not by your own design. But then take walks is a really big thing. And Andy Stankiewicz clearly comfortable enough to move him back into the leadoff spot. He is, I think, learning a little bit more that ball four is a good thing. And while he only has two triples, he had one over the weekend where he drew a walk and then he stole second and he stole third. So in essence, because he walked, he ran his way into having a triple because he found his way to third base. And that is what you want your leadoff hitter. And that is what Austin O'Byrne is designed to do.
Yeah, he did the same thing against Cal Baptist. He got on base and then stole second and stole third base. You know, the first time he's on against Cal Baptist, he had Connor Clift in front of him. So not really any stolen base opportunities there when your catcher's in front of you. But yeah, he's definitely starting going. It's a little late, but let's see if other guys can follow along. You know, if he can be the catalyst, not only for the lineup and, you know, in game, but be the catalyst for the lineup at large. You know, okay, Austin's going, all right, I just got to get back to my approach. You know, I got to start putting the ball in play, you know, whether it's Ryan Jackson or whether it's, you know, whether it's Carson Wells, like we got to cut down the strikeouts, put the ball in play, let things happen, let the action happen. And that was the thing that was so disappointing about the Cal Baptist game. There was a point where they had runners on second, third, I believe it was the fifth inning, I want to say, sixth inning. And they didn't get anything. Second and third, no outs. In the fourth inning, actually, excuse me. So they had a double. They got a single. So they had runners at first and third, and then Dean Carpentier stole second. Second and third, nobody out. Struck out swinging, struck out swinging, struck out swinging. It was a 2-2 game right there. If someone puts the ball in play, Cal Baptist did not have their infield in. If someone puts the ball in play on the ground, it's a run. You do not lose 3-2 when you take a 3-2 lead. You may have lost differently eventually, but you would have had a lead and you would have worse been tied as far as everything went the rest of the way the game played out. But those are the situations, second and third, no one out. You have to score at least one run. You should score both runs. You can score both runs with two productive outs, two ground balls to second base, and USC's up 4-2. Instead, KKK going down, hacking, and not getting anything up there. Now, and give credit to Maddox, the pitcher from Cal Baptist. He had a really nasty slider.
Unbelievable.
I don't care. Put the ball in play. Find a way. And that's what this team has not done consistently. So let's go to our three down. I'll start there. Strikeout, 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 strikeout. I think, what was the stat you told me last night? That they are leading, they have the most strikeouts of any Power 5 conference?
Yeah, and that's top 10 worst in the country. I think at the number leveled out, 169 strikeouts in 16 games.
Over 10 strikeouts a game? Like, you only have 17 outs to play with. Like, you're cutting yourself off. 17 balls in play that they're getting you out. That mean I don't know how many balls they're putting in play per game, but their percentage of hits are probably pretty good if you think of it that way. Like I'll have to look it up here in a second to see how many hits they're getting per game. But you know, they're probably getting what, 7-8 hits a game at least. So a third of your balls that you're putting in play are base hits. So if you put a couple more balls in play instead of striking out, you cut your strikeouts down by 5 or 6. You know, we'll say 6 just for, that's not realistic, but we'll say 6 just because the numbers, then that's 2 more hits when you're getting a third. How many more runs are you going to score if you're getting 2 more hits per game? Probably another run a game. So like that's the type of thing that it's been disappointing to watch. And the fact that it's a lot of the veterans that we're seeing just a lot of swing and miss from. So that was my first 3 down. What do you got to start your list?
Yeah, I'll just mention it. I had strikeouts as one of mine as well. It has been very bad. This is a team that didn't strike out a ton last year. And I don't think it's much of an approach change, but just for some reason, the strikeouts have come. And you mentioned it, that it's the veterans, but it's also the strikeouts just come in the worst possible time to strike out. Second and third, nobody out. The first batter shouldn't strike out. Second batter can't strike out either. And then to end the inning on a strikeout is bad as well. To have it all three happen in a row in a tie game, especially when, as we've talked about with complimentary baseball, you've got a freshman making his first career start, gave up 2 runs in the first inning, but had settled down a little bit. You have a chance to get him in line for a potential win, get him a lead to ease him on the mound. The offense starts it out with second and third, and they just strike out. And that is the least complimentary thing you can do. And I feel bad for Garen Rizzo, who ends up, I believe he took the loss in the game because gave up 3 runs in 4 2/3, which in college baseball, it's a good start, especially when you consider he's a freshman. It's his first career start. After coming in, he wasn't one of the hyped pitching freshmen that we had heard about, like Mason Edwards. And that's just a brutal way to send him to his first loss. And so this team, I believe last year, could have gotten a hit there. Maybe they hit a sack fly, you hit a ground ball to second base, and you help the freshman out. I think the team last year was so good at doing that. You help everyone out. The offense helps the defense. The pitching helps the offense. They're not doing that this year. And you mentioned some of the veterans, and there are some eye-popping numbers here strikeout-wise. Carson Wells, who ended up getting pulled after striking out twice yesterday, 24 strikeouts and 54 at-bats. He's only walked 5 times. You know, Ethan Hedges has 19 strikeouts and just 2 walks. Both those guys have OPSs in the 400s. I believe USC as a team is still stuck. Yes, 663 in the 600s. But, you know, Kevin Takeuchi, a freshman with 18 strikeouts. I don't think you're too surprised by that. A freshman strikeout more. But Austin O'Vern, 15 strikeouts to 6 walks. Ryan Jackson, who was the only player in the Pac-12 last year to walk more than 40 times and strike out less than 40 times. Right now, he's at 13 strikeouts. And he's walked a little bit more recently. He's up to 10 walks. But there's just, some of these guys are the ones you're relying on to not only be your best hitters, but to be the ones to set the example of putting the ball in play. Because if you're going to have freshmen strike out, you need your veterans to put it in play and score runs. And it's the veterans who are leading the team in strikeouts. And you just simply can't have that, especially for a guy like, you know, Carson Wells, who's been with the program for so long and striking out in big spots. If you're not providing power as well, like some guys can afford to strike out because they're going to hit you 20 home runs a year. USC doesn't have anyone like that, maybe outside of Chris Brown or JT Wallen. Some of these guys we've heard have crazy power, but it's not happening for this team right now. And so you can't not hit home runs, but still strike out at a high clip.
Yeah. And like you said, they're not picking each other up in a similar way. You know, that fourth inning was terrible. They give up the lead in the top of the fifth. Well, the bottom of the fifth, Austin O'Vern walks, steals second, steals third. When the pitch he steals third on, Kevin Takeuchi strikes out, but he was in scoring position. You get a strikeout from Takeuchi. You get a strikeout from Jacob Galloway, your best hitter. Inning over. Leave a man on third. So, like, you've left in back-to-back innings, and the turning point of the entire game. You know, it's 2-2, and in that, from the bottom of the fourth, you miss out on an opportunity with 2 runners in scoring position, nobody out. You give up a home run to give them a lead, and then you immediately have a chance to answer, and you don't. So that
one scored the rest of the game.
There you go. And so that's kind of been how it's been for them. They had I didn't even look at the sixth inning. I forgot about the sixth inning. You get a gift. First baseman just doesn't field the ball well from Ryan Jackson. He drops the ball as he's trying to run to first base. Okay, you bunt him over. Now you got an opportunity. Struck out swinging. Tying run still remains at third base. I mean, at second base. So it's been consistent where they're just not getting things done, not playing that complimentary baseball, helping each other out, picking each other up when something goes wrong. And part of it is, I'm sure it's they're pressing. Certain guys are pressing, you know, guys that are veterans. That's why on my three down, I also had the veterans just in general, guys that they anticipated being carrying the load for this team and not been able to do it. So, you know, and then my last three down was the starting pitching consistency. You know, like I mentioned to Eric Hammond, it feels like every weekend you'll get one good start. And then it's a big question mark for the other two guys. So, and it's been different guys each time. You know, at one point we were like, oh, Tyler Stromsborg coming, I think second week, third week, you're like, he's looked the best of them. Maybe they decide to move him up to Friday, you know, kind of repeat what they had last year. And then he gets knocked around a little bit. Kay Naoki, okay, he's building on it. You know, he's gotten unlucky a couple times. He's got had a good start, and then he gets beat up by Arizona. And then Eric Hammond, he got beat up against TCU, giving up the six runs, but then was able to bounce back and have his best start. So you're hoping that Hammond could build on his. They can figure out what the issues were for Adrian Stromsborg and get them going, but it's been very inconsistent. And when you're starting pitching, doesn't give you innings, give you length, you put more pressure on the back end. And now instead of being able to pick guys up, you're putting more on each other. So the exact opposite of what you're looking for.
And when a team is relying on starting pitching coming into the year to be the strength of the team and the really the what moves things forward, that is more concerning, because the starting pitching was supposed to be the thing that was going to lead USC to the most wins, I would say, of any position group. And that's been one of the biggest struggles. And I, on my list, I had, you know, Kay Naoki, Pac-12 Pitcher of the Year hopes. He was the preseason Pac-12 Pitcher of the Year. I still think he can turn things around, but it's going to be hard to work off, you know, those 9-earned runs. It's like when you have a big meal, it'll take you a while to burn off those calories. He has ERAs up to 8 now after being at a decently respectable spot, you know, 9 earned in 2 2/3. And I think you're right. He has gotten unlucky at some point. And ground ball pitchers, as we've talked about, have a tendency to have that happen to them where, you know, 3 straight singles get through the infield. Singles, you know, sometimes on balls in play, if they get through, that will even out over the course of a season. But when that happened to him last year, he would work around it and he'd stop it at 1 or 2 runs. This year, on multiple occasions, that has happened. And then he grooves a fastball right into the zone and it gets taken yard. He's given up a handful of home runs. And that's just something you didn't see last year. And for basically all of the starters, I can't remember too many times last year where a starter completely bombed. You know, sometimes they'd give up some runs and they might have to be pulled earlier than you'd expect. But we have now seen, you know, Kay Naoki give up 9 earned in 2 2/3. Hammond gave up 7 earned in Texas in 1 2/3. And once you give up that many runs early in a game, especially with this offense, which we've already mentioned, has a tendency to press, strike out a little bit too much, not put up a lot of runs, averaging just 4.4 runs a game. If you give up 9 runs in the first 3 innings or 7 runs in the first 2 innings, this team's not winning the baseball game. And that is something that can't happen the rest of the year because USC is really, you know, with their backs against the wall. But it's happened a lot more this year than last. And maybe that's a testament to the opponents they have faced early in the year. I still think Arizona is a good offense. TCU is obviously a great offense. Texas A&M is a good offense, but that is a big problem that you didn't see last year, where even on the bad starts, it wouldn't go to really, really bad or horrible. And that has happened this year when guys are struggling.
Even last year when they would give up 6 runs, because Kay Naoki had 2 starts where he gave up 6 earned. You know, Stromsborg had 3 starts where he gave up 6 or 7 earned. In the Kay Naoki ones, he was into the 6th inning when that happened. Mm-hmm. Stromsborg was into the 5th or 6th inning when that happened. Not the 3rd inning, not the 2nd inning, those guys having to get pulled. And also, I think one of the differences is last year you had Soderstrom that you could throw in there and be a bridge guy. So if a guy's going bad early and it just doesn't look right, you know, or he's struggling to throw strikes, whatever, you could do a quick hook and go to Soderstrom just because he was so flexible. And I don't know if they necessarily have that bridge guy that they can use in different ways the way they did Soderstrom last year. I thought Xavier Martinez might be that guy. They kind of have been using him more traditionally so far as, you know, a setup guy. So, you know, it comes back to, you know, making pitches and being able to get yourself out of jams. Kay Naoki, like you said, a ground ball pitcher, has not been helped by the fact that defense has not been good. you know, how many times did Johnny Olmstead make a play at third base that ends a inning or, you know, gets him out of a jam type of thing versus whether Covarrubias or someone else has been at third, you know, a misplay or not even error, just a play not made becomes something that elongates an inning and allows the one more pitches, but allows an offense to get a couple extra base runners and then a ground ball through, you know, plate someone versus last year there's no one on because you'd already made a nice play on it. Those type of things, you know, the defense is not as strong as it was last year. And, you know, I think it's affecting the pitchers a little bit too. But let's move on. Let's do our where they're at right now, you know, where they stand. 4-12 overall. What key stats kind of stand out to you so far?
Yeah, it's hard when you're only hitting 225 as a team to win games. I think the ERA has settled into a spot that's not horrible. And we've mentioned they've had some big balloon numbers that as the season goes on, probably evens out the ERA a little more. ERA is at 5.53, but hitting 225 in college baseball, you're not going to win many games. Having an OPS in the 600s, playing teams that have an OPS in the thousands as a group, not going to win very many games. You know, when you score 4.4 runs a game, it's going to be really tough for you to win. And so the fact that, you know, USC could still have the ERA it had last year, which I, you know, led the Pac-12. They scored 4.4 runs a game. They'd still lose most of the games because it's hard to keep runs off the board in college baseball. And I think Shotgun, they did a little bit of a better job having some shutdown innings this week, but they just didn't put up too many zeros overall, which is, you know, has been a problem for this group for most of the year. So the ERA and the average, not great. Fielding, I think there were 23 errors in 16 games. It shaped up a little bit over the weekend, but there were still times where even on the Sunday game, Dean Carpentier makes two late errors, including one in the ninth inning that puts the tying run at the plate. Luckily, Josh Blum for USC was able to get out of it, but who knows? That could have led to a tie game in the ninth, and then Arizona has all the momentum. So it's just those little mistakes and the errors that are still happening on defense that need to be cleaned up.
All right, we'll move forward to what's going to go on this week. You know, we already mentioned that USC played Cal Baptist in their midweek game. They will now travel to the Bay Area to take on Stanford, Stanford team that is, I don't know if you guys know this or not, but Stanford's been to the College World Series. I think it's four straight years. They're the only program in the nation that's done that. This is not that team, though. They lost basically their entire junior class and their entire senior class last season. They had eight or nine guys get drafted. You also saw Braden Montgomery, their top sophomore, you know, a guy that hits 20 bombs and also can throw, you know, 98 off the mound, transfer to Texas A&M. Strange situation. That's a whole different story. But he transfers to Texas A&M. So what has Stanford got left? A whole bunch of baby faces. You know, they got a ton of young guys. You know, they got a freshman and sophomore, and that's basically it. They've got a couple of older guys, but not many. The thing is, this team's going to be super good next year because they're not going to lose pretty much anybody off this team. But that means the time to get them is now instead of worrying about next year. The only guy that they're going to lose for next season is probably going to be Malcolm Moore. He's probably their best hitter. He's, you know, a catcher. He's a draft eligible sophomore. He's only hitting 200 so far this season, but he's got five homers. He leads the team with 12 RBIs. They don't hit much either. And like I said, it's because they have a ton of young guys. They have three shortstops that are their infield. That's who they play at second, short, and third. And these, you know, they've moved them around. Then Jimmy Natty is an Australian guy who's their first baseman. He's been their leading hitter so far, hitting 411 with a homer and nine RBIs. The pitching, though, is the question mark. So they started the season off. They lost a series to Cal State Fullerton. They got beat by UNLV in a midweek game. And then I saw them play against Penn State, and they got beat up by Penn State. And Penn State's a program that's not been good in the Big Ten. They got a brand new head coach, so they shouldn't be off to a great start. And give credit to Penn State, they have been off to a great start. But Penn State should have swept that series, honestly. And instead, because Stanford hit, it was 15-4 the first game, 13-2 the second game, and then they had opportunities in the third game, but Stanford ended up winning that one 9-5 thanks to a big grand slam. But since then, Stanford started playing a little bit better. You know, that win against Penn State kind of got them on a little run. They swept Rice the next weekend, so they won five in a row. They won last weekend series against Washington, very low scoring. Both those teams, neither team has much offense. So I think you could see that again this week. So it's going to come down to execution. And Stanford, you know, I watched them. They didn't make plays. They didn't do the small things. Very similar to USC. So I think both pitching staffs, have talent. On Friday, you're going to see a dude, Matt Scott, can be up to 97, 96, 97. I think I had him at 98 or 90, maybe 99 when I saw him against Penn State. He was really good. They got a kid out of the bullpen, Volchuk, who was up to 99. Scott was up to 97, I think. And then Dylan Volchko, I want to say, was up to 99, just and with a nasty slider. Question is, he doesn't know if he can throw it for strikes. And that's the big thing with this team is, with this pitching staff of Stanford, is they have some talented guys, but they don't have any experience. So USC has to take advantage of that. Don't chase out of the zone. Force them to make pitches to you. And that's something that is going to be a challenge for USC because they haven't been able to do that very much so this season. I don't know what else stands out to about Stanford to you.
I think they actually profile very similar to SC. Maybe there's more experience on USC, and that's why it's more disappointing that the numbers are where they are. But Stanford, the average is a little bit better at the plate, but the ERA is worse on the mound. Both teams have kind of gotten off to disappointing starts. The difference is for Stanford, when they've won games, they've rattled off wins. And I think that's something USC hasn't been able to do. So the record still sits in a semi-respectable spot, 8-7. This is Stanford we're talking about, so that's not great for being on the farm. But when they've lost games, they've come in bunches. They've had a 3-game losing streak. They've had a couple 2-game losing streaks. But 5 wins in a row, that boosted the record. Imagine if somewhere in there, even if USC played terrible in all the games it lost, if when they won 5 in a row, the record wouldn't be 4-12 right now. It would be at a semi-respectable spot. And so now I'd see if Stanford can continue to win games in bunches, went to Washington, 1-2 of 3. Now you get a chance to come home and play USC. And for two teams that don't exactly execute very well, I wonder whether Stanford has a big upper hand considering SC's got to come on the road. And we've talked about how we haven't seen what this team will look like in a true road series yet. USC didn't execute on the road really at all last year. So while these two teams could be kind of even when it comes to roster construction and at the plate and on the mound, Stanford's got the home field advantage. And that was huge when teams played USC last year. So they might be able to execute a little bit more at home, whereas USC will execute less on the road, like we saw a season ago. So I think that's kind of what stands out. But I wouldn't say it's not a winnable series for USC because Stanford has had its struggles as well this year. And I think the numbers actually line up to be in a pretty similar spot. The question's going to come down to execution. Who's going to step up? What's the momentum going to look like in game and game to game? And that could decide the series. And I think when you look at momentum and ability to capture it, that was my last three down, by the way, is that USC just hasn't been able to capture momentum. But we've talked about that plenty over the last couple of weeks. Stanford has the upper hand there, at least so far this season.
Very similar profiles. When you look at the statistics, Stanford is averaging 4.6 runs to 4.4 from USC. Their batting average is a little bit better. Their ERA is a little bit worse. It's kind of, they're all kind of in the middle. They walk a ton of guys. They're averaging over 5.5 walks per game. I think that's the big key. Whoever doesn't walk batters to give the other team, because neither offense has been good. So if you can just eliminate those free passes, I think that's going to be huge. And then whoever executes the small ball. Okay, they did walk somebody. Can you bunt them over and then can you finally get a hit? Those type of things. Matt Scott, their Friday guy, like I said, is really good. He was the Pac-12 pitcher of the week this past week. Last week, it was Christian Lim, who's their Saturday starter. He's been up and down. Nick Dugan, sophomore, has got beat up this past week, but has been good in the past. So very similar to USC, where you're going to get a good start out of one of them. But, which of the three is going to be? It hasn't been consistent. It's Joey Volchko, excuse me. Let me make sure I get the kid's name right. He's struck out 8 so far. He's walked 9. So like I said, he doesn't know exactly where it's going. They do have a great closer at the back end. Torin O'Haron has been really good for him. He's got 4 saves and 7 appearances, 14 strikeouts in 9 2/3. So again, very similar. Josh Blum, you're seeing a lot. I see a lot of similarities between these two teams. So I think it comes down to execution. So who doesn't give away free passes? Who doesn't give away free bases through errors? Because Stanford was not a good fielding team the weekend I saw them. I think that's what it comes down to. Whoever doesn't lose the game is the one that wins the series. And it's not like Stanford has a real home field advantage. The home field advantage of Stanford is that there is a giant foul territory. And if you can pitch to that, even better for you. If your fielders can go get pop-ups, those type of things. But as far as fans, that's not going to be a big deal. You know, it's not going to be raucous there until the postseason. And then next week, USC, if we don't get a chance to do our show before, they will be playing at Long Beach State. Long Beach State is off to a fantastic start. Last I saw, they were 8-1-1. I didn't see what they did over the week. Oh, they struggled over the weekend at Wichita State. I think they lost that series, but won one game in the middle of it. So I believe they are now 9-3-1. I'm just guessing off the top of my head. 10-3-1. Okay. Must have won a game, a midweek game in there as well.
I don't think they're, must have been last week. They beat UCLA 2-0.
Gotcha. So they're a team that, you know, has been in a ton of tight games. They've been down 4 runs going in the ninth and find a way to tie it and then win in extra innings. You know, they haven't played the best schedule, but they have found ways to win against the bad teams that are on their schedules and whatnot. So they're a scrappy bunch. They don't have much. They don't have as much top end talent, and you won't see, you know, top end talent necessarily as far as the starting pitching on a midweek game. But they're a team that plays for each other and has been playing really well and is finding ways to win, whereas teams like USC and even Stanford are finding ways not to win at times. So that's going to be the difference. So can they out-talent Long Beach State? We'll see.
You'll love this. How about a 10-3-1 record hitting .209 as a team?
Yeah,
that's what Long Beach State is doing. They win games despite the fact that they haven't gotten much hitting because the pitching picks them up. They got ERA on the twos, which is, you know, if USC had an ERA on the twos right now, maybe the record's closer to .500 to pick up the hitting. So that right now it's the pitching picking up the bats for Long Beach State. Figure at some point the bats will come around, but that's just what good baseball teams do. Even if one area or sometimes two isn't working, one will consistently be there. Right now for this season, USC's consistently not been consistent on any three of the main areas of baseball, whether that's pitching, hitting, or defense. That's why they're 4-12.
And they haven't played a great schedule, but they do have, you know, they beat UCLA. They lost in 10 innings to UCLA. They should have won that game. They won 2 of 3 against Washington, tying the other one. So, you know, they've gotten solid Pac-12 results. Now, granted, those are the bottom tier of Pac-12 teams, as well as USC is in the bottom tier. So, you know, they may have another chance there for that one as well. They play Dartmouth tonight after we record this. So their record may change before then as well. But like I said, it's who executes and who picks each other up. And then that's what you just mentioned is like that's been the deal that Long Beach State has been able to do. So I think it's interesting that we see these programs that are classic programs on the West Coast, Long Beach State, the track record, the history there, Stanford, the track record and history there, USC, what it comes down to. All three of these teams don't hit, but who's the team that's winning? The one that's finding a way because they're picking each other up. And so far, USC and Stanford haven't necessarily done that. And it's been inconsistent. It's about finding that consistency. I think that's going to wrap it up, though, Jack. Do we got anything else for this week?
I think that one thing that the interesting point that I'll leave this episode on is by this point in the season last year, Shotgun, no one was really confident about the USC baseball team. And I think that's actually pretty interesting. You know, we compare to last year. It's like, well, USC was so good last year, and now they're 4-12. That's really disappointing. I believe going into the Stanford series last year, I'm going to do a little bit of counting here, but the team was below 500 going into the Stanford series that started on March 11th. We're recording this right now on March 13th. So USC's gotten more games in to this point this season, 16 games compared to just over, 12 or 13. They went in under 500 to face number 2 Stanford at home, lost the first game to fall to, I believe it was 5-7, then won the next two. The Stanford series was really the big turning point last year. Because coming into the season, obviously, no expectations. And any expectations were that they were going to finish low in the Pac-12. Then they knock off the best team in the Pac-12 to win their first conference series. And after that, they go on a big run. This is the turning point for USC this season. And we've had a lot of people in our mentions and telling us, oh, the season's over, 4-12, season's over. I don't think you can say the season's over this early. If they lose the series to Stanford and they lose to Long Beach State, I think I'd be ready to say it. I think just that you're falling to 4 and potentially, you could have 15, 16 losses, maybe only 5 wins. You're not making the postseason after that start because you've also missed opportunities to get wins against some better teams in the series. And you've lost midweeks, which is it's really tough to come off of that. lost a midweek series to UC Riverside last year. That hurt at the end of the season. Maybe one of the reasons that USC fell short of making the tournament. But the Stanford series last year was the turning point. USC needs it to be the turning point this year, or else I do think you start to have questions about how bad this season could end up, and any postseason hopes that may still remain, I think will be put to rest if USC, loses the series, potentially loses the midweek as well.
Well, you're being more generous than I with saying they have postseason hopes as far as not just winning their way in the Pac-12 tournament, but I think you may be correct in the fact that this is either a turning point or a nail in the coffin weekend for USC.
Exactly.
And, it can go either way. They would still have major work to do afterwards.
Absolutely. But I would say you put the chances at 0.01 if this is that nail in the coffin weekend, whereas the only chance that they would have would be winning the Pac-12 tournament.
And like I said, this is a beatable Stanford team that's going to get better as the season progresses. So if you beat them now, the record's 8-7 right now. Maybe it looks better at the end of the year than what it does right now. If you sweep them or you just take the series and they fall to 500, you're like, that's not a great series win. But then you look up later in the season, you're like, they're 8 games or 10 games above 500. Like, whoa, okay, that win is actually going to boost your RPI and those type of things. So, I think that's the way it works sometimes, but it all comes down to execution. And this USC team is not executed. They have not put the ball in play, those type of things. So if they don't start doing that, it doesn't really matter. So
the one time they executed, won the series against Portland. Shotgun, you mentioned Oregon is probably a regional team right now in the Pac-12, and Portland kicked the crap out of them yesterday in a midweek. So we mentioned Portland's a good team. That series win could look better at the end of the year. It's the only one that USC has right now, but it will look better at the end of the year. They need a lot more of those series wins. And you mentioned that in college baseball, you look to sweep at home and win the series on the road. USC just lost a series at home. It was actually the first home series loss under Andy Stankiewicz. Now you get a chance to go on the road, make up for that a little bit, but you can't keep losing series, potentially getting swept in series and hope to have any kind of positive season.
The crazy thing is he's going to go like 3 or 4 years into his tenure without ever losing a series at Dado Field.
That's true. That is true.
By not losing last year. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Dado Download Podcast, part of the Peristyle Podcast family. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratlin, saying thank you to my co-host, Jack Smith, as well as our special guest, Eric Hammond, for jumping on with us. We really appreciate him taking the time. Really appreciate you guys taking the time to listen. Please like, share, subscribe, leave us a review on your favorite podcast listening platform, and we hope you can join us for the next episode of the Dado Download Podcast.